whatever your concerns are, just to kind of look better about what's going on, or if it was like there's a bill coming up and you'd like them to take a position on something, or want to let you tell them about your position. Like, that's the kind of stuff that we can do. But Adam, tell me what's going on.
Okay, just before I do that, I'm sorry I missed your name. Can you tell me again?
My name is Matt.
Matt, okay.
Yes.
Thank you for being willing to listen and help me, Matt. So, I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version. So long story short, I used to be a police officer in California. When I was retired, I got into construction work. Like the law requires, I went and got a contractor's license, passed all the exams and all of that stuff, and then started doing construction work. Basically, I worked for primarily for a wealthy family here in Orange County. And I was doing a multi-million-dollar remodel project for them. We had a dispute and ended up in court. They alleged that I was unlicensed, and the court fined me almost $1 million for not being licensed. So I said, wait a minute, judge, this is what's called an excessive fine. I said, even under the licensing laws, the maximum fine under the criminal statute is $5,000. This is 186 times that. So after that, what I found is there's a statute that also denies, it suspends or revokes your license until you pay the fine or the judgment. So there's another major problem with that, because you don't get a hearing. Not even an administrative hearing, and there is no appeal process. So as immediately, you know, the judgment was void because it violated both the excessive fines clause of the California and the U.S. Constitution. So I appealed it, and the appellate court said, no, you're not being punished. This isn't a fine. I said, what in the hell is it? And they said, it's an equitable remedy called disgorgement. Well, the United States Supreme Court in 2020 explained what disgorgement is, and it's basically an action to recover profits for illegal wrongdoing.
Okay.
It's not the forfeiture of an entire transaction like what the court did to me. So so let me give you another, just kind of a little bit more on what the court did. So assume that, like, you hired me to build you a $1 million home, and you paid me $1 million, and I went out and bought all the materials and all that stuff, and I hired the people, and I built you the $1 million house, but then you bring an action and say, oh, you know, this guy wasn't licensed. Yeah, I got my house. Yeah, the work's fine, but he wasn't licensed. And so the court made me give back the $1 million on top of the $1 million that I'd already given back to them in work.
Gotcha, which you had already paid out subcontractors, like that kind of stuff, materials, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So you're paying in two directions, basically.
Exactly, yes. So the courts in these cases, they're not taking into account the value that's already been returned. I mean, this is like simple logic, but this has been going on in California for over 100 years. So after the Court of Appeal refused to overturn the judgment, I went to the California Supreme Court, and they refused to hear my case. My argument is they had a duty. Now, ordinarily, the Supreme Court of California does not have to hear your case.
Right, you're discretionary.
Yeah. Exactly, but that rule becomes mandatory if you were not given a full, fair, and impartial hearing and appeal.
Okay.
Otherwise, there's no court in California to go to. So that's my stance on that. So because I had no remedy in California, I appealed it. I did a certiorari petition to the U.S. Supreme Court. They refused to hear the case. So now I have no state or federal court to go to. So then I filed a complaint in the U.S. District Court, an independent action in equity, to vacate the state court's void judgment because it violated the Constitution. And they claim they didn't have jurisdiction. Yes. Yes. What they basically said was that I was appealing the state judgment, but that's not true. The judgment's vacant. It's just to vacate a void judgment, and that's a ministerial act. It's not an appeal. And there's plenty of case law on that. So, yeah, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, but they threw that at me and said, we don't have jurisdiction to do this. And so that's a lie. So they did have jurisdiction. So I appealed that to the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit threw my case out as frivolous. So then I, while all of this was going on, I made a complaint to Cotty Petrie Norris. And her office said that they were going to investigate and get back to me within 2 weeks. And they've never responded since. I have reached out to them multiple times. They've stopped responding. I made a complaint to Senator Morlock's office, what I called a petition for redress of grievance at the time. And they flat out, they said, well, your redress petition is simply to make a complaint. We don't have to investigate it. I said, well, what good does that do if the government doesn't have to take action based upon your complaint and just say, oh, well, you had the right to make a complaint. You made the complaint and we're choosing not to do anything about it. So that's what he did and shut it down.
By the way, back me up on the, so, you know, the, back me up on the complaint that you submitted over to the Morlock's office. I'm just trying to get a sense of, because, like, you know, we're that office right now.
Okay.
You know, because that was the previous, that was the previous holder of the, of, you know, then my boss had an election. And then my boss,
okay.
But what, the process on that, because I don't think we've ever seen one of those. So, like, what did you submit over to them? Or, like,
so basically what I was relying upon, and I'm, it's essentially the same thing I'm doing right now, but it's just the legal terminology for it. Under the California Constitution, I don't have the article in front of me. I can get it for you. But it's very similar under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And it, they both guarantee the right to petition any branch of government for redress of grievance. It's basically the right to make a complaint to the government and have your complaint fully, fairly, and impartially adjudicated by that branch of government, right? Because all the branches are to serve as checks and balances for the other branches. So if one of the branches, such as the judicial branch, is out of line, the legislature or the executive or both have powers to act as a check and balance on that branch to bring it within its constitutionally mandated duty. That was the whole system of checks and balances that were set up. So essentially, if you can't get relief in one branch, you can go to another. And that's also why the federal courts and federal government were set up as a check and balance on the states. I complained to Morlock's office, just as I had done with Cotty Petrie Norris's office, and there his chief of staff said, well, you've made the complaint and we're rejecting it and we're not going to investigate it. So I made a complaint to the California governor and the attorney general, about three complaints to them. They have refused to investigate all of them. I did submit a public records request to them to get the documents evidencing their investigation, and they have none. So I made a complaint to, I made a crime report and a petition for redress of grievance with five police departments in my area who have jurisdiction over this issue. And all five of them, including the county sheriff, refused to, actually it might be four in the county sheriff, refused to fully, fairly, and impartially investigate my complaint or to intervene to stop the illegal behavior. Because essentially what's happening is they're attempting to seize almost $1 million unlawfully. And that's my property.
And the complaint on this specifically is that, like, the court decision was just, was incorrect.
Well, it's not... No, it goes way beyond that. Okay. It goes way beyond that.
I'm kind of putting it in, like, very general terms, but yeah, okay. Give me the
okay.
Give me the specifics on that.
So how it goes way beyond that is this. Okay, the statute that I'm talking about is called Business and Professions Code 7031B.
Okay.
And basically what it says is that a homeowner who uses the services of an unlicensed contractor can bring an action in any court of competent jurisdiction to recover all compensation paid. Okay, so 7031B doesn't make unlicensed contracting illegal. It borrows that unlawfulness of unlicensed contracting from 7028, which makes it a misdemeanor. And you can get up to a $5,000 fine and 6 months in county jail for violating that, okay? So my beef is this. If you go to California Penal Code Section 15, It defines a crime or a public offense as an act or omission of law against law committed. Wait, I need to look it up for you. But the long story is if you violate, if you commit a public offense or a crime in violation of a law forbidding or commanding you to do something, and the punishment for that is a fine or death or imprisonment, it's a crime or a public offense. Okay, so in order, like, I'm sure you understand that only the executive of California, like through the district attorney's office and things like that, or the attorney general, can prosecute public offenses. Like I can't go and say that you're driving without a license and commence a prosecution in criminal court against you. That's not the way the separation of powers works.
Even as a state senator, you can't do that. I mean, we can't even compel testimony at this hearing.
So. Right. So now what has happened is the legislature has unlawfully vested the executive power into private parties to commence what appear to be civil cases on the surface, but what are really criminal prosecutions in disguise. Because
because 7028 classifies that as a misdemeanor.
Yes. Yes. You're taking the misdemeanor offense, the same elements of the offense, moving it over to a civil action, and that's fine, because there are many things that you can do that are, you know, crimes and also civil cases. But the issue that it comes down to is, what's the civil remedy? Are you getting damages, or are you getting some type of equitable remedy? And here, if there is no damages or equitable remedy, it's a straight up penal forfeiture, where they're not taking into account, as you recognized earlier, the benefits that have been conferred upon the other party, right? So the straight up forfeiture, like, no joke, probably the most egregious case I've seen of this is the Judicial Council of California hired this company to maintain the California court buildings. And this company went into a corporate reorganization during the contract, and their new company didn't hold a license for a period of a couple of months. And so the Judicial Council brought a lawsuit against this company seeking to have all $26 million that they had paid under the contract returned to them, even though they alleged that the company had done a good job and there was no wrongdoing. So the courts are egregiously, I mean, this is, the simple way to put it is treason. It is bad. And there have been many people, I'm not the first, I haven't finished telling you my story of what's going on here yet, but there have been, I know of another man who, he was forced into bankruptcy and lost his home because the judgment against him was $1 million. He did the work and there was no problem with the work. And he actually had a license in his own name, but he did it in his company name, and his company wasn't licensed. So technically under the law, the state had already determined that he was competent, but because it wasn't done in his company's name, he was fined almost $1 million and, you know, ultimately forced into bankruptcy and lost his home. Another man, his company erected all of the steel for the Disneyland Hotel, and he had an ornamental license and not a structural steel license. And so they refused to pay him like $1.2 million for all of his work. And the same judge in my case upheld it. So this case has been to the California Supreme Court over 4 times, and they keep upholding it. And it's so egregiously unlawful. So going back to my story, I've been to the executive branch, I've been to the judicial branch, I've been to the legislative branch, I've been to the judicial branch in the United States, and I also went to the FBI and the DOJ in the United States, and I have no remedy. There's no court, no legislator, no nothing. So what's happened now is, as a result of my license being suspended, I have not been able to work. And I've tried to defend myself to get my license back and to challenge the constitutionality of all this. And what has happened is, I believe that people have realized that I've uncovered what's really going on with this, and they're trying to sweep it under the rug. and not address it. And so, because it's just going to expose really heinous, egregious criminal behavior on the part of judges and other people in California government. So what has happened now is that I've been forced into bankruptcy because now one of the lenders on my home has started foreclosure proceedings. So because I could not get a remedy and I could not pay them, I wound up in bankruptcy. Well, I'm in bankruptcy now, and I thought, oh, maybe, you know, I'll have a chance here and the judge will hear me. No, the judge refuses to acknowledge what is going on and literally just gave the mortgage company means to granted their relief from the stay to commence foreclosure proceedings. So I'm at the point where there's going to be a use of force involved if someone comes to my house to steal the property without lawful authority. And I, you know, I do not want that to happen, but I have a right to defend myself and my property against unlawful taking and seizure. And, you know, there is no remedy. So I need someone to get on the bandwagon and get emergency relief. Because it's getting down to the point. I mean, what am I supposed to do?
Gotcha. So yeah, and I guess so. What's the ask for our officer? Like, how could we help? What do you see as kind of like a good, you know, what would be a good action that we could take for you in this situation?
Well, I know that you. I don't know how your process works in the actual legislature, but. You could submit a claim like this and submit it to the floor of the assembly and tell them what's going on and say that, you know, emergency action needs to be taken on this because this is what is going on. The people are being financially destroyed by this statute, and we either need to remove it immediately or and commence an investigation into what has been going on. And that's one thing. Another.
In the specific statute on that, is that the disinfection 7031? Is that,
yes.
Is that the one that we should look at? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. And I would, if you go to, I'll give you my website.
Okay.
It's thespiritoflaw.com.
Okay.
All one word.
Okay.
And you look at that, you will see. My petition for my emergency petition for habeas corpus to the U.S. Supreme Court that they promptly just denied as well. And you can read that. And there's a procedural history up at the top. There's exhibits. I have the recordings of all of the conversations with all of the police departments, all of the documents, everything. It's all there online. The only thing that's not is the bankruptcy proceedings. So far.
Okay, then give us a place to kind of look to see really what's going on, and then use your example as something that we could like maybe look for a legislative solution on then.
Yes, and something fast, because, I mean, if they commence foreclosure proceedings and the sheriff shows up here, the house is gone, and yeah, there's problems. And this is not to mention, you know, that I have serious claims for damages and all of that that's been going on this whole time. I mean, I've been having panic attacks, anxiety attacks.
Yeah, no, I understand how this would be incredibly stressful.
There's no one, all these people that are in government that are supposed to help. And it's not even, I can't just go and say, oh, it's some side, it's the Democrats, it's the Republicans. No, it's everybody. So if you you can go on the homepage, if you click on the image of the Supreme Court petition, you'll be able to download it there, and that will I can give you the case number too. It's 22A426.
22A, and then what's the number?
426. Yeah, it's on their quote unquote shadow docket. And then, yeah, if you go to the exhibits, I mean, not that you want to go this deep, you'll.
That's worth an appreciation fee.
No, that's the actual petition is on the homepage, but there's another page called exhibits, and if you go there, you the first exhibit is the procedural history, which is all of the the procedural history is all of my actions in all the courts. I also have a certified copy of the legislative history of 7031B. That's exhibit B. If you go down to exhibit D, it's all the complaints and government tort claims I've made. If you go to exhibit E, there's audible exhibits, which are all of the complaints to the courts, to California Assemblywoman Cotty Petrie Norris, to the guy for John Morlock, his chief of staff, Lance Christensen. That's exhibit 10. You'll see all of the audio exhibits there. I'm in the process of uploading the transcripts for each of them. It's all there.
Okay, gotcha. Well, Adam, I'll have to take a look at it. I want to be kind of upfront about what the calendar is for legislative offices, too. Like, you know, we can introduce bills in January, and then they work through their process, and then we get a chance to reintroduce it, like, next year in January. So that's sort of the speed that CalEd works on. So if I could, you know, if we can take this up or like take a look at like adjusting 7031, specifically for your situation where it seems like, you know, you were stuck paying out money that you didn't have because you actually used it to deliver a product to the person. It would be like a year cycle. It would be like a year plus cycle.
Okay. So is there anything that you're aware of that there's some other type of investigation or complaint process that there has to be something for some type of emergency situation like this? Otherwise, you know, you're kind of, the whole check and balance thing is a joke. Well, I mean, my case simply proves that there are no checks and balances, but you're the whole power of the legislature would essentially be rendered inept in something like this. Okay. Yeah, I did. I'm trying to remember. I think his name is Adam Silver. Does that name ring a bell?
It only rings a bell. It's not the NBA's guy. That's the bell rings for me, so it's probably not who you're thinking of.
He's someone that works in the legislative department up there. I think he's even an attorney.
Okay.
I got a hold of him once because Petrie Norris's office wasn't responding. And so he put me in touch with her chief of staff, Claire Conlon, and he was somebody that they basically said the other Cotty's office told me that they were going to submit it to some office at the some legislative review office to see if, you know, to basically investigate the validity of what I was saying. But the other thing is that I don't know how it works with your guys' clear line right to the governor's office or the attorney general's office. But, you know, that would be another thing, because the other option is for somebody to make an order for one of these police departments to conduct an investigation. Because they have executive authority to conduct an investigation where you might not. If that could come from, you know, I don't know. Again, I don't know what the authority of one department would be to order another department to do its duty. I don't even think that that's possible, maybe. But there has to be something. There has to be some remedy. And there has to be some process to affect a remedy in a situation like this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can turn it over to you and you do whatever you can do with it. And please, if you would, I just ask that you keep me posted because, you know, whatever decisions I make, I am continuing to go through the court process, but, you know, there is, I mean, you can look on my website and see that I've
You've definitely like gone through that process as much as you could.
I've more than extraordinarily done everything I can to effect a change and to call this to a people's attention. But I am convinced that it has gotten so big and out of control with what the courts have done based upon this statute, they just keep covering it up. Because at this point, when I made my last complaint, and if you'll read the complaint that I sent to the Supreme Court, I allege that they're committing treason because they are. They're exercising jurisdiction that they don't have. And no one in their right mind is going to agree with a near $1 million fine for not having a business license. I mean, that's just reprehensible.
Yeah. I hear where you're coming from on that one. Okay, well, Adam, let me see what options we have available for us. My understanding of this train every so far is that that we are limited to legislative matters, and there are some rules about state gifts, though, which keeps us out of dealing with court cases. But let me see if there's some lever that I'm unaware of, and then I will call you back. I'll try to get back to you within the week to get an answer from that. Okay.
Okay, and I would just look into that mechanism. It doesn't seem like, you know how some, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there are some things that were created in the formation of the constitutions that kind of just lay dormant. And one of those things that I don't think many people know about is the petition for redress of grievance. And let me see if I can pull it up here right now. California law, constitution, and I'm looking for grievance. The people have the right to instruct their representatives, petition government for redress of grievances, and assemble freely to consult for the common good. Article 1, Section 3. And as my research, I have a California Supreme Court case saying that basically you can petition any branch of government for redress of grievance. Meaning you can make a complaint about anything to any branch of government, and it is their duty, and my interpretation, that they have to conduct an investigation, a full, fair, and impartial investigation, and if they determine that there's been a violation of the Constitution or statute, they have to do something to remedy it. So that is the route I would go, but, you know, in my experience talking with Cotty and her staff and Morlock and his staff, they don't have a clue what a redress petition is.
It's something that I can just say as a sample. It's something that we have not been trained on. Now, I mean, obviously people contact us all the time. We help with, like, you know, issues they might have with the state agency, like that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But as far as I've seen a formal petition that came through, anything like that, it's just not something that's come across my desk at this point.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so it, essentially what a redress petition is a complaint. Yeah.
I get where you're coming from. I understand, like, the constitutional basis for that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It has to be a part of the checks and balances. Otherwise, you know, it defeats the whole purpose. But I have another complaint to make. Do you have... So the other one is that the Contractor State License Board has erected its own mandatory arbitration program without legislative authority.
Okay.
And so far, I want to say that they've conducted close to 10,000 cases without any statutory authority. So if you can go to, can you pull up the California Legislative Information website?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Let me know when you're there.
Okay. Well, we have a couple programs that can get to that. So, what do you want me to look up?
7085 of the Business and Professions Code.
Okay.
Okay. Let me know when you're there.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically.
I'm almost there. I'm into the table contents right now.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So basically it says that if you make a complaint to the registrar and after he investigates the complaint, it says the registrar may, with the concurrence of both the licensee and the complainant, refer the alleged violation to arbitration.
Okay.
Note, carefully noting that it says with the concurrence of both the licensee and the complainant. That means that it's voluntary, right? Because you're waiving your right to trial by jury and judicial process. I mean, that was one of the reasons why the American Revolution happened, was admiralty jurisdiction, no jury. So what they've done is they've taken this statute that initially conferred jurisdiction to commence voluntary arbitration.
Right, and mandatory, I guess.
They have both a mandatory and a voluntary arbitration program. Yes, and they are compelling people, forcing them into mandatory arbitration. And even in my case, they conducted an arbitration proceeding without even notifying me.
Okay.
And so then, so it involved another construction business that I had. So there was a complaint that was made after that company went out of business. And so they sent the complaint to the address of the company that went out of business, but never sent the complaint to me as the qualifying individual for the license. Oh, that's a major due process concerns.
Okay.
Now, when you go and I can give you all the if you go on my website under exhibits, there's exhibit there all for arbitration, because I've reached out to the contractor state licensing board, and those people, the registrar says, I have no power to do anything about it. And if you look up, it is some new constitutional amendment that has happened that basically they have taken the power away from administrative officials to challenge the constitutionality of the actions that they're taking.
Okay.
And so now these people are essentially rendered helpless, which is ridiculous, because here's a man that's in charge of this administrative agency who apparently has the authority to suspend someone's license, but once the suspension has happened, he can't revoke it or correct it, according to him. Which is absolutely ridiculous, because the whole mandatory arbitration proceeding is completely unlawful. They have no authority for it whatsoever. And if you read the statute, it does seem a little confusing. And at the end, you'll notice that after it goes through all these things, it basically says you have to have the concurrence of the licensee and the complainant. And if they don't have it, they're still forcing people into mandatory arbitration. Let me just see real quick. If you type in, can you go to your search bar for the internet? Just type in mandatory arbitration CSLB.
Okay.
And you'll see the first thing that should pop up is that mandatory arbitration guide.
They've got a publication guide on, yep.
Yeah. And that refers you the authority back to 7085. And there is no mandatory arbitration in anything in government, because it's treason. Can't do it.
Yeah.
And here they are. And I have, if you look on my exhibits, there are, I have Public Records Act requests from them. I think it's close to 10,000 cases. I could be wrong. I could be way wrong on that. Yes. And I did report it to the registrar directly, Dan Fote or David Fote or something like that. And I brought this to his attention, and we were going back and forth on email. And the moment I said, wait a minute, you need to read the whole statute, he's never written back since. So they know what they're doing. And at this point, he should have stopped the mandatory arbitration program and gone to the legislature or done something, but they're not. They it's just going. It's ongoing.
Gotcha.
They're still doing it.
Okay, well, let me flag that too. We are not on Business and Professions this year. The committee that will probably run through. But I will flag that also just to let them look into this to see if there's something we should take a look at or we should try to fix.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. I got some notes here. Adam, I appreciate that. I will get back to you specifically with the answer to the petition to see kind of like what the process is for that. And then also I'll also flag the mandatory arbitration.
Yeah, so just thank you. Just to give you just one other little point is both of these statutes are what is suspending my license so that I can't work. I'm not sure if those may have been discharged in bankruptcy at this point, but they're still on the record there, and I have not had the opportunity to send them a letter to notify them of the discharge. But even if I could, I can't work while I'm trying to defend myself in court. There's just not possible, and I cannot afford an attorney to do it for me because, I mean, this would have cost another $1 million, what I've done. The other thing is that as a possible legislative issue is I know that, like, I have an idea that, like, in Congress, they can just pass some sort of bill or something like that that compensates people for injuries. And that is something that I would recommend. As well. So they can conduct, the legislature can conduct an investigation. I can submit to them my damages, my claim for damages, and we can come to a resolution on the issues of that ASAP. And that would be another remedy that I would accept because I to keep going through this broken court process is not going to cut it. Yeah.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Let me go do some research for you and see what I can find on my end, okay?
Okay, yeah, just to reiterate, that Supreme Court case on my website on the front page, that's going to lay it all out for you.
Okay, I'll go take a look at it, and that's thespiritoflaw.com, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, got it. Okay,
thank you.
Have a good day, okay?
Okay, you too. Bye.
That's how fast things shift.